everyone, and welcome to another spoiler review episode here on the
Geek
Buddies.
I need something.
You know what?
And maturely said.
I think it's gonna catch on. I think it's gonna catch on.
Yeah, it's gonna catch on.
Hey, you know what? Also, you also cut on Mike Vogel.
That's true. Your workout sounds have gone.
Caught on, Mike. Get that on a t-shirt.
Listen, the fans love it. They love hearing me awake workout.
Remember when we talked about trying to keep this to 90 minutes?
Yeah. We're already off the rails.
Out the window.
We're already off the rails. All right, let's focus up, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, thank you all so much for downloading this episode, whether you're watching us on the Outlaw Nation channel, the Geek Buddies on the Outlaw Nation channel, or you're listening to us on our podcast stream. And remember, our podcast stream, just type in the Geek Buddies. It is there. It is a separate podcast stream from the Outlaw Nation Network. The Geek Buddies is its own thing, so you can subscribe. If you don't want to hear or don't want to watch our faces, you can just listen to us there, and all our stuff drops there. All the Geek Buddy stuff. Go back and watch old episodes or listen to old episodes of WandaVision or Mandalorian if you're catching up. All of that is there, or our regular shows as well. So please subscribe to that podcast feed wherever you download podcasts. But today we're jumping into episode 2 of Falcon and Winter Soldier. This is a spoiler episode, spoiler review. So if you have not seen the episode, go watch the episode, come back and hit play again after you've hit pause on this video. We're going to go around the horn to get the initial thoughts about the episode. Then we're going to break it down and look at it scene by scene as quickly as possible. Let's start with you, Michael, like we always do. Mr. Vogel, what was your overall thoughts on this one, The Star-Spangled Man, episode 2?
I thought it was great. Continuation of all the things that I was enjoying about the first episode. I also, about halfway through the episode, I think said out loud in my apartment, "There's your action, Kalinowski." I thought after giving us sort of the setup of Sam's life post-blip and Bucky's life post-blip, they did not waste any time in this when they jumped right in. And I also think, and we'll talk about it in more detail, I really appreciate how everything is a little bit complicated with every character in this series. They're not giving us any character to 100% hate yet. And so, like, I thought that was something else that was really interesting. So a lot of fun stuff to talk about. Really enjoying this little bit more political, little bit more socially charged take on the characters in the MCU that we love. And I can't wait to talk about it.
Absolutely. And that was Michael Vogel. He is a writer, producer. I forgot to introduce ourselves, so Evan.
We're getting out of 90 minutes. Let's go.
I know. We're going to get it. I'm John Rocha, writer, producer of Outlaw Nation. That is Michael Vogel, and that below me right there is Shannon McClung, who's an actor you might have seen in, I don't know, Reno 911, something like that. Anyway, Mike, Shannon, talk to me. What were your overall thoughts about episode 2 here?
It reminded me of the best episode of Reno 911 that I appeared in. No, it was awesome. I mean, completely different from the first episode. I think this is the show that when people tuned in that they thought they were going to get, that it's more of the international intrigue, action, adventure. But I completely agree with Vogel. It really presents not a quandary for the audience, but it's definitely subverting expectations as to how one should feel about certain characters. Even though by the end, I'm like, nah, I think we were right. Like this seems like the way this particular character is going, but God, it was a blast, a fantastic action sequence. And sort of a grim realization that the constraints of an episodic series or a limited series, we might be getting one big action sequence an episode. Until we get to the penultimate or the big finale. But overall, huge fan, watched it 2 more times. I loved it.
And joining us for the run of these spoiler review episodes is our special guest, Captain America aficionado, Mike Kalinowski. Mike, it's good to see you again this week. Tell me what you thought overall of this episode.
Boys, I've been dubbed the wet blanket, and I did a wet blanket this episode again. I thought it was mediocre at best. No, come on now. This was the episode. This was it. This is what I thought we were getting with the show. Like, Shannon looked over to me, I think after it was over, because we watched it together, and he's like, this is like a completely different show. And my first thought, he's like, from WandaVision? He's like, no, we're talking from episode 1 to this. Like, this is what the trailers gave us. Like, this is what I wanted. The buddy action, they were in the mission, they're there, the action sequences. it felt like the best of the MCU. Like, you know, all the throwbacks. And then I didn't think we'd be getting certain characters this early on, and we did. And I love the politically charged stuff. I love that they're doing it. I didn't know if because it was Disney, they might toe a different line, but they're going, no, they're going full on. This is, we're going there. And from the comments and online and stuff, you see people are loving it, and some people are having a problem with what they're doing. It's, you know, two sides of every coin, and that's what it should be. But hopefully, I'm loving it. I love what we got. And I'm curious, what do you guys think? Because, you know, I did watch the first three episodes of Invincible last night, and they dropped those together.
Right.
And if you watch the first one to the second one, they're vastly different too. And I think if they would have dropped that show on one episode, you know, might not have had people coming back like, I got to watch the next one right away. Whereas the MCU, we know what we're going to get. We it's a built-in fan base. It's got the loyalty. So like, we're going to tease them what they want eventually, or tease this series out. I kind of feel like if they would have put these two together, that would have been a better package.
Yeah, maybe.
At least two, like, but that's not the model they're doing. So I'm on board and loved it. Loved it,
that's,
boys.
That's a fair point. I mean, they dropped all, you know, WandaVision's back to back, those two first two episodes to get you kind of hyped up into it.
Right.
Yeah, for the reviewers to get you kind of reviewing it correctly and seeing what the rhythm of the show is going to be. Maybe you're right, Mike. Maybe they should have, because this isn't a 10 episode run. This is only six. And we're already almost next week. We're at halfway point of the season.
Right.
So it's crazy to think about.
What did you guys think of the fact that almost everything that happens in the personal lives in one had no bearing on this episode? So a lot of people are like, some people were like, I think Shannon, you said it, like people will be like, start with episode two. Like for people that don't want to take the time or whatever, like, how is it? You started with episode two.
Well, I have to say, I don't agree with that. I think they did touch upon, you know, Sam dealing with being a black man in this situation, with being a black hero in this situation, just like that line he delivers to John Walker. It's always that last line. And so there's power in that that still connects to what was going on in the first episode. With Bucky, we get his therapist coming back, the PTSD stuff, the stuff he's struggling with. So there are ties, but you could probably start with this episode if you wanted to. But I feel like the other one lays the groundwork. Sorry. Go
ahead. It laid the groundwork, but also it doubled down on what we got in episode one. So if you're looking at economy of story, you know, and every moment, every minute on screen should not be, you know, or needs to be utilized. It's like, oh, we addressed his issues of where he feels the family stuff was different, but then we don't touch on the family in this one. Let's talk. Let's get into it.
Yeah. I'm going to say real quick, my overall thoughts of the episode is, I don't know where I fall now on this show right now. I really enjoyed last week, but this week gave me a lot to think about. And I wonder by the end of this conversation with you three, whose opinions and intelligence and knowledge I respect, I may come out on one side of the fence or other about this episode, because there's a lot of things I loved about this episode, and there are a lot of things that gave me pause in this episode as a person of color, watching how some things were presented and not addressed. They were presented. There is a difference between presenting race and actually getting into the subject. And I thought, I thought they copped out in a couple of moments, but we'll talk about it as we go along. So my mind's not completely made up on this episode, but I'm looking forward to talking it with you guys.
All right. Okay.
Let's jump into it. The title, Star Spangled Man, obviously a reference to Captain America First Avenger when he was out trying to convince people to buy war bonds. And they made that song about him, the Star Spangled Man, which, of course, was the music by Alan Menken, lyrics by David Zippel. So shout out to those incredibly accomplished gentlemen as well. But we open with this introduction of Wyatt Russell. Remember, Wyatt Russell, God love him, he had to endure a week of memes. When you're an actor, that's a rough, rough week. I mean, the last meme I saw was Carl Fredrickson dressed up as Captain from Up. And I was like, damn, that is horrible. But I guess the makers of the show realized, like, this, if we end on this note with the wink, people are going to be mad at him or not like him, so we got to give some background. We see him kind of in this locker room at his own ice cool, running his fingers over the locker room. He pulls off one of the locker name tags or whatever, and there's JW10, obviously a reference to him. His wife walks in. This is the character's Olivia Walker. It's played by Gabrielle Bindloss, kind of touching base with him, asking if he's living his glory days. Walker reveals, talking about expectations, how he doesn't want to fail them. Then his best friend or his friend comes in, Lamar Hoskins, and he's talking about, you know, how he's going to introduce himself. They banter for a little bit. This is clearly a preview for what's coming in their relationship as the episode goes along. They allude to having worked together. Walker reveals how frustrating it is to do the meetings with senators, interviews, and handshaking ceremonies. And Hoskins tells him, hey, this is the job, not just the battles, not just the missions. also the public relations side of it is also the job, which is very similar to what Steve Rogers experienced when he became Captain America. Michael, what did you think of this first scene here in this episode?
It was kind of surprising. Like, I mean, I think what we were all alluding to is the fact that, like you said, after last week, I was just ready to hate John Walker. I was like, look, like this guy, you sir, are no Captain America. And as we get further into the episode, he is no Captain America. He's far cry from Steve Rogers in a lot of ways. Yeah. But I really appreciate that they are giving us someone who is not a, you know, per a lot of your complaints at the end of WandaVision about Hayward, John.
Yeah.
They're clearly not going down a road where they're giving us a one-dimensional kind of cardboard guy for us to hate because he's not Captain America. They're giving us a character who is a decorated soldier. They're giving us a character who has a wife who loves him, a best friend, played football, just this all-American guy who at the very beginning of this episode just says he wants to do a really good job.
Yeah.
And so they open us up to this this character that, like, they go out of their way in this scene to be like, yeah, you're not going to hate this guy, at least not off the bat. And I think that is good because, and it comes about even more in the next scene when he's being interviewed that we'll get to in a minute, but I would rather have a character that I know is going to be problematic,
yes,
that I don't fully hate, because in real life, we don't have cardboard villains. When we talk about racism, when we talk about white fragility, when we talk about all the issues we have in our country right now, it's easy to point out the super bad people. Right. But there's a lot of people that are well-meaning that maybe don't have everything that the Steve Rogerses of the world have. And I think that going down that road with John Walker is ultimately going to be a much more rewarding road from a storytelling standpoint, and probably ultimately kind of a tragedy for him if it goes the way that we all think it's probably going to go.
Yeah, Kalinowski, it seems like they're laying the groundwork here of the pressure of expectations. Now, remember in the comics, they're kind of doing a reverse engineering, so to speak, of both this character of Hoskins and this character of John Walker. Both are actually from the comics Battlestar and certainly the new Captain America Super Patriot U.S. Agent. They're both usually introduced to us as people who already have Super Serum, but in this way, they're going a roundabout way, kind of a backwards way to introduce and show that the pressure of being Captain America may be what leads him to maybe take this Super Serum. What did you think as you watched this first scene, brother?
Yeah, it's interesting because, like Mike said, like, I didn't hate him. Mm-hmm. I don't want to hate him. Like, and I think going back to John Walker in the 80s, like, he was trying, you know, we've all been in that position, whether it's of our fathers or whoever we're living under the shadow of right. trying to be better and be like, and they have such a great shadow over us. And we all can experience that of knowing to aspire to something where, you know, we always fall short or we think we fall short. And Captain America put such a, you know, big shadow over everything in this MCU to be the guy that was selected. And, you know, I'm sure they probably went vetted thousands of candidates for this. So I am curious about the super soldier serum because it seems like he doesn't have it right now.
Right.
In that one, he doesn't have it right now.
Yeah. But I mean, he's flinging
that
shield.
Says he doesn't have it.
Yeah. The next scene. Yeah. Go ahead, Mike.
He says it, but we'll get into that later.
okay.
You know, it's interesting that they're like, I love the fact that they're clearly, like they said, like, he's not one dimensional. I love that. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of not rooting for him because he's, but also you meet later and you see the other things we're going to talk about later of he's dealing with things that Bucky and Cap were dealing with being Cap. And I love that's a whole nother level with the wife and all that, the best friend. That wasn't John Walker originally. He was kind of a little more gung-ho guy. I'm kind of getting shades a little bit of the ultimate Captain America in him in this. Oh. He's a little bit more militant. Like, and people, it's so interesting if they ever decide to bring that version of Captain America in. I think it would kind of be like two different Batmans where it's just like everyone loves Christopher Reeve, but anytime a new Superman comes in, it's like, it's not Christopher Reeve, where Evans is Captain America and you get the ultimate version of Captain America. And it's like, oh, this guy's not that version of Cap. I don't know if I'm going to like this. So this guy, it seems like they might be doing the ultimate version with him. In this, you know, he's much more militant. And so I'm very curious to see where they're going with this.
Yeah, I'll swing back to you, Shannon, and then add the second scene here in just a second. But this overall, you know, in the comics, John Walker's from a small town in Georgia. And so it seems from this opening scene and from what we're about to see, that very much is the vibe here. They give him a Latino wife who is not in the comics, by the way. This is not a character. They made it up for the show. And then they give him a black best friend or a black yep. friend here who is does become, you know, a Bucky in or a battle becomes become Bucky, then becomes Battlestar in the comics, but not the way that they're presenting it here. So no. I feel like they're kind of turning around what I felt at the end of the first episode. And a lot of people felt that they're saying, yeah, we'll take a dopey or dorky white guy over a black guy. But now you find out that white guy has is an interracial marriage, has a black best friend from a small town in Georgia, which of course has can be interracial with a lot of these high schools. What did you think as you watch this opening scene, and then as we go into the scene where he's interviewed by Sarah Gaines, they're having what looks like a fully black marching band announcing him out there with signing all the autographs. It talks about not having the superpowers. What do you think about both of these scenes combined?
Yeah, dude, it's such a great turn that the conclusion of episode one is, I think universally the audience was like, you put that shield down. That's not yours. Like the anger that I feel like the audience had. And then to present this guy who does have shades of Steve Rogers. Like I want to be the best I can be. I want to do the best I can do. So many people have all these expectations. I just want to go in and do the job. And then when you get to the Good Morning America interview with the marching band and everything, there still was a little bit of that anger from me that I'm just like, buddy, this is bigger than you. I mean, I think a lot of times, like, people are tools of the government, and this guy is a tool right now. I mean, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, but you know, he is used. Just like Chris Evans was in the first Avenger, is like when they saw they weren't going to be able to replicate, or they didn't think they were going to be able to replicate that formula. It's like, all right, let's use them as propaganda. Right. And like let's get everyone excited. Like, you know, you have this very divided world that we've established in episode one. What's the best way to unite the country? Put out another Captain America. Let's see if we can bring people together through this symbol that this guy has not necessarily earned yet. I mean, you do see that, you know, he is a decorated serviceman. You see him throwing the shield and he looks awesome doing it.
Right.
But there, as an audience, you're still just like, but I did think it was interesting when he did say, you know, I don't have the flashiest gadgets. I don't have super strength, but what I have is guts. And that's the thing that Tommy Lee Jones said in the first Avenger, you know, you don't win wars with being nice. You win it with guts.
Yeah.
And as like, I'm going to go forward just a little bit, just because we start cutting over to Bucky, that last line of dialogue that John Walker has, which, this really kind of, this really hit me in the heart, where he said, I liked what I was doing, would make people feel safe. Steve Rogers was the kind of guy who could do that. He gave me hope. Even though I never met him, he feels like a brother. As he's saying that to one of Steve Rogers' legit brothers, I was like, this is heart-wrenching.
Yeah, absolutely. Mike, I'll swing back to you. They present him, you know, this is all PR. This is all presentation. Of course, Good Morning America is on ABC. Disney owns ABC. So it's all synergy here. Sarah Gaines on The View, I think. But you look at this. This is the way you do PR, right? We talk about three medals of honor. He's all shucks about it. You do it in his high school town. So everybody who knows him is there and cheering for him. He's one of their own. It's an incredible rollout for how you do this version of Captain America, push back on maybe people who might claim that it's racism in this world, not just in our world, but also in this world that they've created. It's an interesting PR move, and we hear that he's testing off the charts with MIT. He's throwing the shield around. We see videos of all of this, but it's very clear he doesn't have superpowers. He's just a good, incredible soldier who's accomplishing things no one's ever accomplished as a soldier, and he's also this Captain America. So what do you think about this presentation?
I couldn't help but think, first of all, on the nerdy side, just kind of cool.
Yeah.
Before we get into that part, I do like, you know, I couldn't help but compare this to like all the Netflix Marvel shows where they were never allowed to mention anything in the bigger Marvel universe.
Oh, yeah.
Like they would refer to the Hulk as the green guy or the attack on New York as the incident. So it's just really refreshing to have him be like, look, I'm not Tony Stark. I'm not Dr. Banner. Like, it's just nice to have a world where everyone can talk about everyone and it feels like the Marvel universe of the comics, and it gives it that expansive kind of positive feeling, which is great.
Yeah.
Beyond that, it is. They walked this fine line, and I think it was a really interesting line to cross, which is, yeah, the government picked another guy. And yeah, the guy is in an interracial marriage. He's got a black friend, like whatever. But he's still white, and he is still real, real white. Yeah. And it's not bad that he's white necessarily, and it's not that he's a bad guy because he's white. But there was just this kind of sense of privilege that he had up there as he was being interviewed that Steve Rogers never really had. You know, like it was like this was where I'm like I they did such a nice look. For only guy to win 3 medals of honor, you guys said, great with the shield, like tests off the charts, like on paper, this guy should absolutely be a Captain America. But if you remember, on paper, Steve Rogers had no business being a soldier.
Great point.
That's like that's one of the big differences here. Is this guy was sort of like from this guy is like all the guys that Steve Rogers was up against in the first Captain America movie. Not bad guys, but Steve had that something different because of his experience.
Yeah.
And if you really track, you know, like Shannon said, and like you guys all said, like this scene of him running out to the, you know, the football field, the marching band, the whole thing is very much like Steve Rogers doing propaganda in the war, which he hated doing. And he doesn't really become the Captain America that we love until he disobeys orders.
Right.
And then he disobeys orders again in Captain America Winter Soldier. And then he disobeys orders again in Civil War and goes on the run. Right. So when we talk about Captain America as this ultimate symbol of what's great to be patriotic and American, the thing that made him great wasn't actually doing everything the government said. And everything about John Walker is you are a born and bred soldier who is going to toe the party line across the board. And then to Shannon's point, when you do cut to Bucky watching this guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's just this sense of like privileged entitlement that this guy can be like, I feel like Steve was a brother. Never met him, but I feel like we're on the same page. And it's like, he means well. He's not doing something that's like horrible, but it just comes across kind of douchey.
Yeah.
And it kind of comes across as like, dude, there are people out there that like fought with this guy that really were his brothers. Like, I know what you're trying to do here, but I feel like you're missing the mark. And that to me is the writers nailing the mark.
Yeah.
Like the fact that they're walking this line where John Walker's not doing anything bad and you get why the government chose him. And yet at the same time, you're like, this feels slightly off to me.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really interesting.
That's a great point, Mike. You know, and like I said, talking with you guys about it is going to help me kind of navigate this, but you're right. It's almost, it's not necessarily insidious, but it's really close. This kind of willful ignorance to his crossing the lines of familiarity with the situation. You just picked up the shield a few minutes ago, and you're talking about Dr. Banner or Stark or being a brother with Steve Rogers. A little more respect, a little more deference, but it almost seems like this is almost owed to him that he's always been accomplishing this. And Kalinowski, this is such a different introduction to the character of John Walker, as you mentioned earlier. What did you think about this scene, you know, coming off of the scene in the locker room?
It's funny because I noticed an arrogance in this scene.
Yes.
He's cocky. The way he's sitting in the chair and he's kind of like, well, you know, this. And he's kind of in the locker room. He's kind of unsure of himself. It's before the big game, that mentality of a player before the big game, the quarterback. Okay. But he's on the field. Like one thing I've noticed, no one in the audience and no the public, they're all for him.
Yeah.
No one's like, not my cap. And of course, they would filter those people out from being in the crowd.
Yes, they
would.
But
there is no.
There's no protest outside.
Right. This is carefully orchestrated media management. And we've seen it in current day politics. Like they put the people they want behind him and in the audience and with the signs where they need to be. Right. But we don't see the who are these people in the country that are having these like, nope, this isn't Cap. But like you guys said, it brings me back to the line in First Avengers. Like we don't want a perfect soldier. We want a good man. And this guy is a perfect soldier. And he is. To the military, they probably want him over Steve Rogers. Like, this is who we should – this is the guy that's going to toe our line, do what we want to do. This is exactly what we want. The only thing that I'm kind of – and I'm not – I don't want to say too much about it because I don't know what's going to happen. Like, and this is coming from the comics. I always felt like Steve Rogers with the shield, it was one of the super soldiers serving to help him. But it was like – it was a certain person that could use that shield. And they did a great thing in the comics when Cap died. They tried to replace Cap, so they bring in Hawkeye. And Hawkeye was one of the only people that could throw it because of his accuracy. And he says this. He's like, yeah, people can't throw it. and Nick Fury was like 20 S.H.I.E.L.D. agents are in the hospital because they all broke their arms and trying to catch it. And so he's flinging this thing around like it's nothing. So I'm kind of like, I got to distance myself from the comics because, but on the other hand, it's like the super soldier serum made Cap. It allows him to do the things that he can do. He's resilient. He can jump out of planes and land like Bucky can do. So I'm not 100% sold that he doesn't have anything in him yet. I don't know if this might be a reveal later, or it's going to lead to where he needs to take it to kind of up his game.
Yeah. I mean, like we'll dive into it later, but I mean, it really does seem like they are building us towards this guy's feeling a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
And I think that that's only going to increase over the next few episodes.
Right. Yeah.
And the pressure to be able to be this, to be in the shadow of Steve Rogers and try and like be your own Captain America, I think will probably lead him down a road that will end up with him and the power broker.
Yeah, it was just the two scenes, and I'm glad they did both of them because we like when he was out on stage, I'm like, you cocky, like just even the way he's sitting in that chair, like kind of smirking with her and flirting with her. I'm like, oh, where was the guy from 5 minutes ago? Like,
right.
So that was great writing that they did those two scenes. And I'm like, oh, this is the guy with the
All that's missing was a lollipop, right, Mike?
There you go, pal.
But let's move on to the next. And I agree with everything you guys are saying absolutely here in this scene. And it's presentation. And look, and you're right. They didn't – Cal and Oscar bring up excellent point. No protesters outside. Because I guarantee you there are probably quite a few black people in that town who are like, wait, what? You're going to replace a black Captain America possibly with a white – and even though he gave up the shield, still – a little respect here could have been delivered, but
but the public doesn't necessarily know that. But keep in mind,
the public, Shannon's right. The public is not aware. Like the public in the Marvel universe doesn't know everything we know.
Well, wait, wasn't the Smithsonian thing broadcast? Weren't they watching that or not? Is it that they don't? It's news that Sam gave up the shield, right?
Yeah, but it wasn't Sam. It's not necessarily Sam giving it up. It's Sam handing it over to the Smithsonian. Like, hey, Captain America's gone. Here is his shield. It's not asked me to pick up the mantle.
Gotcha. Fair enough. Okay, fair enough. All right.
Yeah, so just it's – but I think you're right. It's a good distinction because if you were under the impression that the world knew that Sam Wilson was supposed to be Captain America and then the government chose this guy, that's one story. And that would just explode things right away, probably. Mm-hmm. They're doing much more like the world doesn't know that old Steve showed up. All the world knows and all the government knows is that they recovered Captain America's shield and gave it to the Smithsonian post the blip and post everyone that was lost. And only Bucky really knows and calls him out on it in this next scene.
And Rose,
but that could also lead to still like we have people all the time. We think even though it's let's say they're replacing, you know, Steve Rogers with Walker, it's, you know, white guy for white guy. There's still people that could still be outraged. Like, no, this is not Captain America. How dare you replace him? Where is Steve? What's going on?
Why are you? And the rumors that he's on a space station or something. Yeah. But you're absolutely right. all right, let's go. And I'll come back to you, Cal and Oscar, in this scene to start off here. Sam Wilson and Torres are prepping a checklist before Sam heads off to Munich. And out of nowhere, Bucky shows up having seen what happened, you know, ignoring all these texts for months. But now all of a sudden shows up where Sam is. They talk about the John Walker presentation, the PR thing that did here. Bucky says it isn't what Steve wanted. Sam says he has bigger things to deal with. Tells Bucky about the Flag Smashers. Bucky reveals his issues with Red Wing. Maybe I missed that in the movies, but then they talk about aliens, androids, and wizards, leading to a funny little exchange about the Hobbit in 1937, a sorcerer versus wizard banter, but mention his staring problem. But they're talking overall about the fact that that Sam gave up the shield. Bucky is mad that Sam gave up the shield. And this is kind of laying the groundwork for what we're going to see later with the therapist, with Amy Aquino coming back, about what that actually meant to Bucky. And then Bucky invites himself onto the mission. So this is what you were talking about earlier, Kalinowski, that you're happy to see the banter, the buddy cop banter between these guys. Did you like seeing it so quickly in this episode?
Absolutely. I loved it. Like, because leading off with last episode, I'm like, did they just go their separate ways after we last saw them at the funeral? But clearly they've been involved with each other in whatever they're doing, because he knew where he was. He knows what he's working with the Air Force. So I love that. But it also hits home that last scene in Endgame. We all had our thoughts of what we wanted to see the shield up end with. I wanted to see it end up with Bucky, like just because of following the comics and that redemption arc of him of, you know, 60, 70 years of killing people. It's like, that's a redemption to have to own up for past sins and what you've got to do. So to see it go to Falcon and he sat there and there's so many little nods that aren't said in that end scene of Endgame where Bucky's looking at him and he's like nodding like, go to him. Like, yeah. Bucky knows. And I think when Steve left, Bucky knew what he was going to do. Mm-hmm. I had that feeling. He gave him that look. He's like, I'll be right back. And he's like, you know, don't do anything stupid. How can I, you're taking all the stupid with you and all that. Like, yeah. I think Bucky knew what Steve was going to go do and live a life. And now to see him, I think he firmly believes that children, not like Steve chose you, not me. You should, I would have kept the shield. He's like, no, it was yours. That's your shield. You let him down. How can you do this? I love that moment between the two of them. And Falcon's like, it wasn't your call to make. Like I did. I think, was it later where he talks about what was right?
That's later. In this scene, he does say, you don't get to come here with your overextended life and tell me what my rights are. He does say that here. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause Bucky missed all that. Like think about how long he's been asleep for, in and out of stasis and whatnot. So he missed everything that has happened with our country. And he was completely disenfranchised from that. Like he didn't think anything about it. And that Sam Wilson has lived the life of a man that's not Bucky, you know, he comes back after a killer and he's still probably treated differently. You know, this was a man, Bucky was an assassin. It's known who the Winter Soldier was in the MCU. And he's still treated differently than Sam, who has not had that history. So it's like, no, you don't get to come here and tell me these things. And, but you see it, these men were brothers. The three of them were brothers. And you kind of had that brother banter with them and the older brother. It's like, no, it was his wish. You know, what are you doing?
It's permeating throughout. You're absolutely right. Yeah. Shannon also, now Shannon, you write these scenes for your shows that you animated episodes. It's right. There's some funny scenes that you're writing. What did you think about this aliens, androids and wizards conversation? Did it feel a bit forced or was it funny? What did you think about all and the scene overall?
I mean, there's a little bit of a forced feeling, but they bring it back. They finish it so beautifully with talking about like, who are you going to fight next, Gandalf? He's like, wait, how do you know The Hobbit? And the fact that Bucky, like, the Hobbit was published in like 1937 or something. So like, Bucky would have been at the age to read The Hobbit. I thought it was really, really great. And I do think overall the writing, because I think the writing's great. I think everything probably could have used one little joke pass because everything could be a little, the dialogue could be a little peppier, a little snappier, but it's still, I still really, really enjoy it. And just to the Red Wing thing, Bucky is a guy whose life has been overextended because of technology. So I don't think he's necessarily going to trust this thing. I think the only technology he trusts is his vibranium arm. And like, think about it when he was in Wakanda, like he was in the most technologically advanced nation in the world. Yeah. And he was living on a hut you know, with hay bales. So I don't think it's an accident that he has a book that it's very much like Steve Rogers in Winter Soldier, the man out of time, that he's still writing everything by hand. And the only technology that he does trust is from the people that got that bad stuff out of his head.
Yeah. But Michael Vogel, what did you think overall of this scene? They're coming back together for the first time in a while. They're having the banter and the back and forth. Bucky's trying to convince Sam to that he made a mistake here. Did you think Bucky was doing his own kind of privilege, thinking he could walk into Sam's life and tell him what to do?
Yeah, maybe a little bit. But I think also, like, to disagree with Kalinowski slightly, like, I don't know that Sam and Bucky in the MCU are brothers in arms. Mm-hmm. Like, if you just take what we know, they come together in Civil War, and the entire vibe in Civil War is we are working together, but we don't really get along. And then Bucky stays in Wakanda. Sam goes on the run with Steve for 2 years, never works with Bucky, never sees Bucky. Bucky's in Wakanda the whole time. Mm-hmm. They come back together in Wakanda, instantly jump into a battle, instantly get dusted. We see them at the funeral together, and now we're catching up with them months later. So this idea that Bucky, Sam, and Cap have all been running around fighting, like, Bucky is absolutely Cap's brother, and Sam is absolutely Cap's brother. And these two are two people that don't really have a strong relationship, but are both bonded in the loss that they're feeling for Steve Rogers. And that's just MCU specific. That's not talking about anything in the comics or anything else.
Okay. Michael, I put it the fact of I was wonderful friends with Shannon McClung. Shannon McClung was wonderful friends with you. You and I came together and bonded instantly over probably one night of drinks and a Comic-Con over 4 days. And we bonded wonderfully. So I'm inferring that these men have a a bond.
Well, we haven't seen that one night of drinks between these two.
But you're inferring something. Yeah. But like when you and I met with each other, we didn't literally give each other shit and say we hated each other repeatedly. I mean, well, not to each other's face at least. But no, so I'm just saying, look, it's fine. Like maybe you're right and maybe that's the vibe, but the vibe that I'm getting is these are two people that don't really have a strong relationship, but they're both unified in how they feel about Cap, and they're both particularly unified in how they feel about John Walker.
Yeah.
Neither of them is happy with how this went down, and I think it's telling that Bucky was straight up ignoring Sam's text messages.
Yes.
For months until the John Walker thing happened, and that's when he goes into action and shows up and is like, "You fucked up."
Right.
And like again, this isn't a "Hey brother, I've missed you." It's a
no.
Literally show up out of nowhere and be like, "You fucked up bad. You right. did but, this wrong. Why did you do this?"
But you have to look at Bucky in the sense that he is not buddies with anyone. Like, if what I love about Sebastian Stan's portrayal of his character, he is like a bulldog still. Like, he has that, you watch, he can flip in an instant and kill you still. I think he has a fine razor's edge he's walking, where even with the girl on the date, he's still like, someone walks in, I could see him reaching for a gun or a knife on himself. Like, he's constantly, his situational awareness, everything about him, he even though he's deprogrammed, he's still in that mindset of a killer constantly. So he's never going to be smiley and buddy, you know, as much as, you know, they can, but I still feel there's like, he walked right into that airbase. Like it's not like, "Hey, Sam around." And like, I don't, like, they have a history there. There's a history of there that I felt was established with what we were given.
But what history are you like, I'm just going by not what I'm inferring. I'm going for what has been shown to me on screen.
So you, and I'm not right or wrong. So you think when they leave an Endgame, they go off, and this time right now is the first time they're seeing each other?
Yeah.
I think that's very, very possible.
Really?
Because, yeah. I mean, well, they say in the first episode, he's been ignoring his text for months. Sam has been the one trying to reach out. And I get your point, Calvin.
Okay. I could be wrong.
Well, who knows? We shall see, I'm sure. But I think your point is interesting to look at, and we'll move on to the next scene here. But your point is because Bucky apparently thinks it's okay to ignore people and then just storm into their lives. And everyone else has to acquiesce to Bucky. And Sam's like, "Fuck that. You're not coming into my world and telling me how to do things or dictating our friendship on your terms. You are going to respect me in this way." And Sam spends the majority of the episode trying to make Bucky understand that he can't play the smoldering stare at you act the whole time and think everybody's going to just completely acquiesce to him. Fuck that. So yeah.
And in episode one, in Bucky's story, Sam gets brought up, and Bucky does not get brought up because Sam's like, "I can only," and again, I'm inferring here, but he's like, "I can only do so much.
Exactly.
My life has to continue."
Yep.
You know what would clear this up? A timestamp.
All right, now we're moving on. Next time.
Wait, can I just wait? Right, just before ahead, Mike, I know, can I just say two other things about the scene, just really, really quick? One, just from a writing standpoint, I do agree a bit that the big three joke was forced. I think, and again, I love this whole episode. I loved it all. I think this whole scene is a little bit forced.
Thank you.
Really? I think that
I do too.
Yeah, I think that I think that Bucky showing up out of the blue, where just contextually, like, how do we know? I buy that the Winter Soldier can find anybody, so it's not a big deal. But he does just kind of show up out of the blue. They dive right in. And kind of to Kalinowski's point, they give us very little context of where of what their relationship has been up to this point, aside from what we can already infer.
Yeah.
So the whole reason that we're having this conversation a little bit is that we're not given that, which is not the worst thing in the world.
Right.
I also think that in addition to, like, that joke being a bit forced, but still funny, and I do think the fact that he read it when it came out did stick the landing on that joke. It was really funny. Right. I've seen a lot of memes going on with, like, pictures of Bucky from Cap the First Avenger. We're like, this guy is picking up ladies right after he read The Hobbit. You guys which I thought was really funny.
Well, we can't, but
also think the other piece of this that was a little bit forced is they have a conversation, and the goal that Bucky has here is, "You fucked up. You didn't get the shield. You didn't keep the shield. You messed up." And then instantly Sam's like, "Well, I'm going to go check out these flag smashers." And Bucky's like, "Well, I'm going to get on the plane with you." And you're like, okay, I want them to get on the plane together. And that moves things forward. It is kind of a little bit of a jump from where Bucky was. But all that being said, that's just especially to say it from a writing standpoint.
Sorry, Mike. Go ahead.
No, it's a little bit forced. But it got us where we needed to get to move the plot forward. So I didn't knock it hard, but I think that was important. The other thing, and it's going to come into the next scene as you dive into it, is I think this show's doing a really good job of laying the groundwork for why Sam actually is a better Cap than Bucky.
1,000%. I think you're 1,000% Mike. As I was watching that, same thing occurred to me last episode and this episode. They're doing the slow progression to get people to understand. Yeah. When they give him the shield to Sam, you're going to want that to happen by the time the show ends. And that's going to be great. Let's move on. I agree. It felt to me this scene a little bit like some of the Avengers of Ultron jokes at the beginning of that. It's like a little bit forced. Didn't have the great. Yeah, a little bit. And Bucky, who's been complaining about PTSD, what I do next, I've been fighting for 90 years back to back to back, jumps on another mission. So it's a little interesting how they make this all happen. But we'll see. And it might be economy of plot. As you said, there's only 6 episodes. All right, they sit in the plane staring at each other. They're flying to Munich. Bucky, Sam jumps out with his saying he doesn't have a plan. He's going to do his thing. Or Bucky accuses him of not having a plan. Sam jumps out doing his thing. Then Bucky jumps out without the chute, which feels very – and I thought this was on purpose – very familiar to Lost, like Jack going through the street, waking up, the position, even the sound, boom, it sounded very similar to how Lost opens. And I wonder if that's because it's an ABC property and they're making a little in-joke, we shall see. Anyway, they meet up in a, you know, he puts Red Wing on him. Bucky says, get that thing away from me, I'm going to kill it. They meet up in a warehouse, see the flag smashers loading up the trucks. They have this kind of weird, relaxed approach to this all, jokey. I mean, this seems pretty serious to be making jokes in all of this. Then the White Panther versus White Wolf banter, which is very funny. Bucky just wants to dive in head first. Sam wants to wait to get more intel. And then Sam says, who gives a shit? And I wrote this down. Is this the first full-on curse word from any MCU hero ever in any of the movies or the TV shows? No. I don't know. So if you guys can think of an example, let me know. But I can't remember one where they cussed. Anyway, they think they see a hostage. Bucky takes off. Sam follows. Great action sequence here between these two 18-wheelers. They think they're stealing medicines and vaccines. And as I said, a hostage. But it's actually Carly Morgenthau in there, who is not a hostage, kicks Bucky off the truck. Then they have this huge, massive fight scene. All of a sudden, Captain America, John Walker shows up. Battlestar shows up, and they all get their butts kicked and end up off this thing with some fun banter when it's over, as Carly kicks Captain America onto a car that's following behind, apparently not wanting to stop, wanting this whole fight scene happening between two 18-wheelers. Look, apparently that person had to get to where they were going.
They had a schedule, and they were going to stay on that schedule.
That's right. That's the German work ethic, is I don't care what's in front of me. I got to clock in.
What is this now?
Stop. Nine.
Nine. Shannon, let's go to you on this first. Oh, no. I mean, sorry. Michael, let's go to you on this first. What do you think about this whole sequence here, this whole scene, and the battle on top of the trucks as well?
So as much as I thought that maybe that big three joke was a little bit forced, it's good, but forced, all the banter here was gold. The two of them together throughout all of this, just hilarious. Buck jumping out of the plane, you know, it's like, that's Cap's move. Cap jumps out of the plane. We talked about it with Falcon in the first episode. Falcon jumps out of the plane. Buck's like, Buck doesn't do quite as well as Falcon and Cap do. And it's really funny. And then that Sam comes in right away with like, I filmed all of that. Yeah, I got all of that recorded. You know, it's just really funny. And yeah, all the banter once they get into the building is really fun. The white wolf, White Panther joke was just golden. Like Sam's reaction when he's like, do a little bit of this living in Wakanda. Now you're stealthy, like you're the White Panther. He's like, White Wolf, actually. He's like, wait, what? For real? You got a name?
For real?
I think that what was really cool about the scene is that what you saw was Bucky just wanting to run in guns blazing. He just wanted to go in. I see some people. We can take them. I've got a vibranium arm. You've got wings. Let's go. And Sam like held back. And Sam's like, you only see this many people. There's actually this many people. There's actually this. And you see Sam actually thinking through this way in a way that Bucky's not. And I think that that's really kind of important. Then the battle, holy shit. I mean, as much as it's always a good thing, like when you've seen a lot of trailers and you know that there's going to be a battle on a boat. There's going to be a big truck battle, whatever. And then you get to it and you're like, yeah, I saw this in the trailers. But when it actually delivers and kind of is like, this is great. And yeah. This was definitely one of those. Like, I'll let Shannon talk about a lot of the specifics in the action because he's the action guy. But it was just such an enjoyable scene. It kind of like set up everybody. And then, yeah, Walker and Battlestar coming in right away, getting involved in it. And you just sort of like the comparison between the two of them. And again, John Walker didn't suck. Like, yeah. He had some good moves. Like, catching Battlestar with that shield, that's a good move.
Yeah. That's from the comics, too. Yeah, good.
Yeah. It was. I was like, all right, I'll give you that. That was not too shabby. Mm-hmm. But you just see everybody get their ass kicked. Like, nobody was quite prepared for what was going on here. Nobody quite knew what they were getting into. And then Falcon kind of rescuing Bucky at the end there, like that slick move under the truck, them rolling into the grass and staring longingly into each other's eyes for a brief moment before they got up. It was just really, really great stuff all across the board.
I think they call that the Griswold maneuver when you go under the 18-wheeler.
It's the Griswold. They did the Griswold. They pulled the Griswold. Except he didn't do when Chevy Chase does it. There's this great expression. When he goes under, he just goes.
That, I call it the effing expression. Shannon, yes, as Mikey mentioned, you do write a lot of action sequences in your work. You do well with that stuff. You're looking at the way this was mapped out and choreographed. I had a couple issues. Maybe you can help me with them. Why isn't the other 18-wheeler like honking as soon as
Bucky
opens the door?
You.
Why isn't that happening? Why are cars still driving down the
road? Thank you, dude.
Oh yeah, it felt a little weird to me. Some of the decisions overall. What did you think?
We established German work ethic. That's why those cars. That guy's got to clock in at the store. I love what led up to it. That we're establishing, like we've established their characters, and what's great is when you have those characters established, you don't need jokes. But you can have character based humor, and that's a lot of like Sam's Wakanda. Sam's Wakanda comment to Bucky as Bucky's walking in and Red Wing's hovering and he swats at it. Like those are the type of moments that really make us love these characters because you don't need set up punchline to have a fun comic moment. Yeah. Now with Bucky saying like, you know, let's go. Because he doesn't trust Red Wing. He doesn't trust the technology. Then Sam shows him, like, look, there's actually five people here. We got a hostage. The whole idea that Bucky goes to the second truck, which granted, that's where the hostage is, but he goes where he's right in the line of sight. I'm like, this is an incredibly stupid move. Yeah. But it's also a move that he would do because they've already established that. He was ready to run in guns blazing. Yeah. And when he gets the great thing with Bucky that I think we're going to see more and more is Bucky is a grumpy old man. Mm-hmm. When he gets kicked back into the windshield of that other truck, and I think he says shit there too. So we got a couple of shits already, but that shit. And the moment where Carly Morgenthau grabs Red Wing out of the air, cuts it in half. You've got that great moment where Bucky is getting his ass kicked, but at the same time he's like, oh man, I've wanted to do that forever. And then John Walker coming in. And the moment where he's like, Sam, Bucky, John Walker, Captain America, and you see that expression on Anthony Mackie's face, like this fucking guy. And when he throws the shield, as the shield has ricocheted, one, he's throwing the shield at the back of people's heads.
Yeah.
Which I'm pretty sure, I don't remember Steve Rogers doing that. Like, even when Steve Rogers was fighting, he wasn't necessarily aiming to kill. He was aiming to incapacitate. Right. You throw something at the back of, you hit someone on the back of the skull, there is a high likelihood that there's going to be a body count. Mm-hmm. But then you see Bucky kind of snatch the shield out of the air, which is something he instinctively did at the end of Civil War with him and Steve fighting Iron Man. And then John Walker just takes it and the fight keeps going. And I loved the when Battlestar swung in and that little sort of forearm bump that they did. It's so ridiculously cheesy. And
it's so bro-y.
It's so bro-y, but so 100% in character. And the moment of Anthony Mackie, even though he got work too, the fact that Bucky is hanging on the bottom of this truck with a tire right here, and he reminds him that little girl kicked Bucky's ass. That was just a fantastic moment. And when he did the Griswold and they end up on top of each other, that statement from Bucky, like, we really could have used that shield. I don't necessarily agree with him. I don't think that shield was going to be the equalizer when you are that outnumbered. That being said, it is, you know, we are establishing the groundwork for Bucky's point of view from for the story going forward.
Yeah.
What do you think, Callan? Ask him. I mentioned the issues with the other truck being high behind, seeing all this happening. But overall, we're also getting the storylines pushed further, right? When Bucky opens it, he sees that it's actually not weapons. This is medicine. This are supplies.
Right.
This is all of this. So he's kind of surprised by that. Carly Morgenthau, who that actress is doing such a fantastic job. Her dip out and then dip back out, yeah, and then the smile and then the fights that happen. These are super soldiers. So now we're advancing that there's multiple super soldiers on these flag smashers. So hidden amongst the great action sequences is actually a furthering of the plot, a furthering of the issues we're going to be having. Walker is flying in because Walker is on a mission from the government to stop these people as a member of the GRC. Falcon and Bucky are in here because they think they have weapons. Once they don't have weapons, that changes the whole equation for them, but not for Captain Walker or whatever his name is. Battlestar. What do you think, Callan, ask about all of this?
It's interesting because, again, it's like I'm torn because I'm trying to watch this scene and watch it take myself out of the fact of, I'm like, why is U.S. Agent or Cap, he's keeping toe-to-toe with them, and he's a human. So it's just like something is – like Battlestar, he's got a tech vest on him, so he's even more armored up. Where Cap's just wearing his suit. He's got the shield. But he's going toe-to-toe with these guys. And I'm just kind of like – and then there was a moment where he gets kicked off, and he's hanging off the thing, and he pauses for a second and looks up, and then he kind of tries to struggle up. It was almost like this – like he wanted to fling himself up like Cap did in Age of Ultron. Mm. But people around him, and he's just like – and he didn't. I could be reading way too into this. Settle down, Vogel. Settle down. Settle down.
Interesting.
But again, it's so funny. Like, I think I look at things so funny sometimes. Like, okay, Bucky's on the plane. He's got this cool new jacket. Don't know where that came from. But then he's like, I'm going to rip this arm off now because I'm going to need my arm free. He's like, why don't you just build the jacket without the arm like your other suits? Like, why did you have to rip this nice jacket that someone made for you?
A tearaway sleeve. You wanted a tearaway.
Yeah, you want a tearaway sleeve or something.
This is how you know Kalinowski likes to build costumes in his spare time.
Yeah. Oh, you ruined it!
It's like, wait, you would build that without the sleeve like your old Winter Soldier outfit. You knew you're going to need that arm.
You need that arm.
I love what they've established, and they established this way back in Incredible Hulk with the Super Soldier Serum, with the way that they move. And I love that they can run. Like that to me, I remember it was in Incredible Hulk when Blonsky starts running on the field towards Banner. And it's like, William Hurt's like, my God, he's doing it. Like, that to me was the first time I was like, ooh. Because First Avenger didn't really show a differentiation between the super soldier and the regular person. Like, Incredible Hulk was the one that did it. And I know that comes later, and they didn't utilize it in that way. And then Winter Soldier, when that first fight in the Lemurian Star, where you see Cap, you're like, oh, that's a super soldier moving. And so to see Bucky do that, you know, Falcon's got his wings, so that adds his level to it, which he can kind of keep up. But then to see, and you got the flag smashers with their super soldiers, but then Walker was kind of keeping toe-to-toe with them. So, you know, it's interesting to see. But then again, we get the shades of gray with the flag smashers. Like, oh, they're not terrorists. And we talked last episode, we're like, you kind of see their point, a world without borders. Isn't that something we all want? And they're now these we get later, they're these Robin Hoods with this medicine. You know, you see, I think one said vaccine on it. On the boxes in the truck was vaccine. So you're like, oh, this is, and why is the government trying to stop this? And, you know, it's again, shades of gray that we don't know where we're going with this yet. So, but I said, like, that action scene, come on, it doesn't get any better than that. That's movie quality there. It's movie quality. It's not the way she frames it, and she shoots action so well. And this, I don't know if she's shot any, looking at her resume before this director, I don't know of anything that would lead her to know that to shoot this action. I know there's this talk that Marvel, their second unit is done by action people and they let them handle it as opposed to the director. So I don't know if she was on dealing with this. I don't know, but it just looked so good.
Yeah.
So knowing what I love, and that this was right up my alley. Perfect.
Some of the real quick before we move on, and real quick response, please. Some of the issues people brought up when they saw this trailer is that, oh, does the joke about her being a little girl, that seems a bit sexist. I don't know if I'm old and that didn't bother me. And I don't want to disrespect people who did. Did you guys think it was out of character or bothersome to have him say and bust his balls a little bit that a little girl kicked his ass? I mean, I think that still works nowadays, or is that sexist?
If a little girl like that kicked my ass and you guys made fun of me saying a little girl kicked my ass, I don't think that little girl, I mean, She was compared to him, he's 102 years old. That's a little girl.
Also, they cast they cast her really specifically. She looks like a fucking angel.
Yeah.
It's the same reason she worked so well in Solo. Where she's kind of playing basically the same role. But like she that wasn't a you got your ass kicked by a female, females suck. There are so many females in the Marvel universe that are ridiculously badass.
Yeah.
She is this sweet little looking girl who they thought was a terror, who they thought was a hostage.
Yeah.
And he flies out of the back of that truck and slams into the other truck. She could have just as easily been a hostage who was a little boy, and he could have been like, that little kid totally kicked your ass, and the joke would have worked the same. So not to disrespect anybody's opinion on that, and obviously I am a dude, so I see it differently. And so if there are women out there who like saw that and took that a certain way, absolutely I think that I can understand how in the world that we're living in today, there's a nuance there. That one did not, in the trailer nor in the moment, did it strike me, because I thought it was more about her, the vibe she was giving off, than her gender, to me.
Yeah. Surprising.
Agreed. It's, not only does she look like an angel, she does look like a child.
Yeah.
And so the fact that
young, certainly young,
that this kid kicked your ass. I mean, maybe that would have offended folks less if that kid just kicked your ass.
Yeah, maybe. All right, let's move on. I don't understand any of this. I guess I was meaning the trucks and all that. Okay. He can still fly and he can still run. Why are they not going back into the fight? And I imagine for story purposes, maybe they felt, okay, we got our asses kicked. These are super soldiers. And maybe they're not running back into the fight because now they have to reevaluate the situation if they have vaccines and medicine and not weapons. So that's another part of this too. But so Sam is a little surprised. This is like, how in the hell after 80 years are there a bunch of super soldiers running loose? Walker shows up as they're talking and walking, and he acts again. That sense of privilege, like he acts like they're all on the same team. We got to work together. And Bucky, who's not going to be shy about his opinions, is just because you carry the shield doesn't make you Captain America. They eventually agreed to get a ride with him and Battlestar, and then they start discussing the intel on the Flag Smashers. Then they mention the serum, which John Walker says is the serum. Doesn't exactly have a great track record. That's great to have Walker say that, because if he does take it, he's taking it even though he knows the risks of it. So that should be interesting down the road. He speaks about government property, how Battlestar hacked Red Wing government property. Exactly what Haywood said in WandaVision. Vision's body is government property, or our property. Legal issues here. Interesting. Then we hear about the Global Repatriation Council, the GRC. They're doing their best to get everything going. They talk about violent revolutionaries. Sam says, everyone thinks they're violent revolutionaries when they have the resources. The Battlestar kind of introduces himself after all of this. And this is where Bucky says, F this, I'm out of here.
That was Bucky's limit. That was the limit.
And then trying to be the best Captain America I can be is what Walker says. It'd be a lot easier if I had Cap's wingman at my side. And that's the moment where Falcon is insulted and says, it's always that last line. Kalinowski, talk to me about this scene in the truck, man.
I think, like, you see the two different dynamics of the two, you want to call them team-ups, you know, the two guys teaming up, and how vastly different they are. Like, they are night and day, the two of them, the four of them, and the two sides right there. I think it was brilliantly staged with each on each other's side. They could have done, you know, two and two opposite. Just from a filming standpoint, it was great. What I loved and was interesting is with Battlestar, such a character that was the government building, because they always believed that Cap needed a Bucky. And that's a comics thing where Cap and Bucky were always together. They always had that. And there's been so many iterations of them, whether it's, you know, Jeffrey Mace or I think it's William Nosland is his name. And then there's always Bucky and Cap together. So the government's like, Cap, it's kind of like Batman and Robin. Cap's always got to have a Bucky. So to go this route and have him show up like that was fantastic. And those guys, like, kind of to your guys' point, you know, where I think that Bucky and Falcon are buddies and had this team, and you guys like, no, they're not. These are guys that they've worked together. They came up together. Who knows? We could find out maybe that Battlestar was one of the guys up for Cap, and they just were like, kind of like in a casting, like, we like you for the role. You're just not right, but how about this role? Like, you know, and why didn't they choose him over John Walker? I'm sure it has to do with race. You know, the government saw this, and they wanted their poster boy, and I think, but I love the fact that he loves his role as Battlestar. He loves what he's doing. He's like, and it's like, they're not sidekicks. They're partners. I felt more with those guys. Right. They felt partners. They're like, you know, but again, I think this brought Bucky and Sam together. I think it, I think this was a moment of characterization with the two of them, where they're like, okay, we're kindred spirits, you know, and we're kind of spiritual brothers in arms, but now it's like, okay, our world is now changing and we are kind of this old guard, and it brings them on this, and that's why they both leave together. And it's just not, I love that. So that was one of my favorite scenes in the episode.
Okay. Shannon. Yeah. There's a lot here within the conversation for sure. And, you know, bringing up the fact, I mean, if he understands that Battlestar is not his wingman, why would he call Falcon Cap's wingman? And in the history of the comics, Falcon is always pushing back against that. Doesn't want to be called Cap's wingman, really wants to be on his own in terms of as a separate hero. And so they kind of alluded to that a little bit with that last line comment.
Yeah. This is one of those scenes, especially when Bucky and Sam are talking at the beginning. This is when I think that this is another example of could have used another joke pass, like the cyborg brain shutting down. I'm like, it's fine. Like that's a good draft, but I feel like there is better dialogue here. I feel like there's better lethal weapon like dialogue that could have been used in a scene like this. But I immediately forgot it as soon as Walker and Hoskins got there, because that scene was just so great. And call back to something you stated earlier, John, was Walker's over-familiarity with people.
Yeah.
That drove me crazy. I mean, it drove me crazy in all the right ways. Like when he says, you know, as Bucky's walking away, he's like, you know, we need to work together, Bucky. And it's like, Bucky has already said, Sam, like, you can't call me that. Mm-hmm. Like, Steve knew me longer. Like, right. Steve had a plan. This dude... This chucklehead who's got my friend S.H.I.E.L.D., you definitely can't call me that. Like, and it's Walker is basically like sees himself as the new boss. Right. Like he's coming in and he has to establish like I'm the primary, I'm the guy, but I want you on my team. But he's still doing it to me in all the wrong ways. Like, no, Bucky is Sergeant Barnes. Sam is Captain Wilson. Like, you know, you need to identify them by their ranks. Yeah. But overall, like finding out about like the GRC, I mean, it really puts things into a perspective. Like if they're basically the watchdogs of the GRC, it's like, so are you Captain America or are you more, you're looking out for one group of people right now. That's what it seems like.
Yeah. And Mike Vogel, this is absolutely what they seem to be setting up Walker to be. He is a government guy. He is for whatever the American government needs to get done. He says it even in the interview with Good Morning America, that he just wants to make people feel safe and his people feel safe. This keeps pushing the narrative forward here. Yeah.
First of all, the shot of the car stopping and Bucky and Sam just not even considering getting in that thing was so funny. Yeah. Like, I was like, that is gold right there. It was so great. First of all, in the world of like establishing what things are like post blip, the Global Repatriation Council, the GRC, is really, really interesting. This group that is reinstituting social security numbers, healthcare, citizenship, all this stuff, like trying to get people who are in all of these sort of displaced camps. That there's just all these people that have no home now after 5 years, and they're all in these displaced camps all around the world, and that the Flag Smashers are hiding there. Like, that's all just really interesting backdrop for where we are in the world, and sort of gets to what's going on with the Flag Smashers when we get to them in the next scene. So like all really, really interesting stuff. The fact that they hacked Red Wing, it kind of like that is the Shannon's absolutely right about this sort of over familiarity with people you've never really worked with, who are the people that worked with the Cap who came before you, and the fact that they so casually were like, oh yeah, we hacked Red Wing. That's how we found you guys. Like, all of it was just, all I kept thinking was, every time John Walker said anything, I was like, oh, the sheer caucasity of this man. The caucasity. I can't deal with the sheer caucasity. It was just so much. The fact that Bucky, that Battlestar comic, get him out there. But yeah, like, really, that whole... it would be a whole lot easier if I had Cap's wingman at my side. Like, it was just, it said everything that you needed to know, even though it's what we've been saying about Walker all, and it keeps just happening in every episode, is that here, if you on the surface of this, like, look, he's the guy, he comes up, he says, hey, I'm the Captain America, you guys are the guys, like, we should all work together. Like, nothing on the surface of it is like, well, yeah, I guess that's right. But the way he does it is just the subtle, like, hey, I don't, and like, hey, I'm really having a hard time. I'm the new Captain America. You guys really knew him. You guys fought with him. And I want you to fight with me at my side. I want to learn from you. I want us to work together. There's a thousand ways he could have attacked this I really want you to be the wingman here.
Yep.
I just see it because knowing what we've got from him so far, he's like one step away from like trying to get Sam on his side and go, hey, man, what is it? I have a black wife. Like I just, he's or, that one.
I think she's Latina, but yeah, sure.
Latino wife, I'm sorry. No worries. But like I meant like, so race isn't an issue for me. Like I'm he's just this one little step away from saying something like that. And you're just like, oh God, dude.
Another part of this, and I want to throw this in. You know, I was doing the show that I host sometimes, SEN Live, and Sabrina Ramirez, she's in her 20s. She's reviewed stuff. She's on the first cut. She mentioned how Generation Z people are very upfront with what they want. They have no qualms about it. I wonder if there are four people on another review show who are in their 20s who are kind of seeing John Walker's point of view and are against what Bucky and Sam are doing and pushing back against it and saying they don't want a part of it. So I wonder if this is a generational thing, which totally works, by the way, to have it as an underlying issue between these guys, that it's just two different approaches from two different generations of people. Not to say that Generation Z doesn't have those people that could be respectful and understand the situation, but this could just be the way he approaches things because of the generation he's from, and also the caucasity, as Michael mentioned. So it's fascinating to look at, and maybe something we attack down the road. Real quick, I wanted to let you guys know a little bit about Battlestar. He was introduced in Captain America number 323, Lamar Hoskins. He was pulled out of Mark Gruenwald's legendary run. He was originally a professional wrestler who was granted super strength from the Power Broker, who we've already heard mentioned a few times in our next scene. We'll deal with that. When John Walker took over as Captain America, Hoskins first became the new Bucky before ditching the name in favor of Battlestar. And the reason it was ditched is because of writer Dwayne McDuffie, real writer Dwayne McDuffie, who sadly passed away in 2011. He reached out to Gruenwald and told him that Bucky was a derogatory term that was used to categorize African Americans before the Civil War. So they wrote that into the storyline of Captain America and had Hoskins change his name when he found out that that was the name that they assigned to black men and women, or black men actually, before the Civil War, and embraced Battlestar as his new name. Really interesting. Dwayne McDuffie making a change here in the history of this character in the comics. So shout out to some proactive changes and for people being willing to listen. Mark Gruenwald being willing to listen. Of course, Dwayne McDuffie worked on so many projects. Static Shock, Justice League Unlimited, Ben 10, and won 3 Eisner Awards. So you listen when that man has an issue with something. All right, let's move on to the next sequence here. The next scene is this. This is a quick one, so we don't need to spend too much time here. Flag smashes in a warehouse. Some random German dude is serving them chicken livers for whatever reason. they're being presented as Robin Hoods. Carrie gets a text that says, you took what was mine. I'm going to find you and kill you. It's from a number that's unknown. But by the way, for me, this is the cheesiest bunch of revolutionaries I've ever seen, for God's sakes. Carly needs to know if they are committed because they're not going back after tomorrow, which kind of indicates it's going to be a massive event. They talk about the GRC, that they care about the people that came back more than the people that stayed during the blip. So already we're seeing battle lines being drawn here, but I'm not as 100% behind these flag smashers. I don't see that real dedication in terms of the casting and the approach. Shannon, what did you think here?
I mean, I guess I didn't really see an issue with it, but it's right now, the GRC and the Flag Smashers are representing two very distinct sides of the issue. Yep. And I think, as we know, like, very little is correct when it's an extreme on one side or the other.
Right.
I also think that the German gentleman who made them the chicken livers, maybe he was the guy driving behind them. And that is why, like, he knew that the Flag Smashers, he knew the Flag Smashers were coming. And that's why he was so dedicated to get there to make sure they had a comfy bed to sleep in and some chicken livers to eat.
Chicken livers. All right. Fair enough. Mikey, what did you think of this scene?
Yeah, I mean, look, I thought this was like a information scene. You know, we got some really important information. We got the fact that people look at the Flag Smashers as heroes. Because there is clearly medicine, food, vaccines, stuff that is being earmarked for one place and other people aren't getting it. You know, it's been 5 years, you know, 5 years of kind of like coping with half the world disappearing and then half the world all of a sudden comes back. Like, there's going to be resource issues.
Yeah.
And certainly it seems like some people are not getting those resources, which is kind of like at the core of what the Flag Smashers feel. So I thought that was good. And then, of course, like you said, getting the text that says, you stole what was mine. I'm going to find you and kill you is pretty much, I'm assuming the Power Broker and I'm assuming what was stolen was Super Soldier Serum. I could be wrong about that, but that seems pretty clearly what that's about. So good information to have, and kind of just further contextualizes that the Flag Smashers are not just a group of big baddies with mustache twirling villain plans.
Yep. What do you think, Kalinowski, about this?
I think actually it was an incredibly important scene because I forgot my point here. Jeez, I'm sorry. We talk about the Flag Smash. Like, she gets that call. And so far, we get these Flag Smashers, and they are, well, first of all, that's it. We talk about, you brought with Sabrina, like the age difference. These are all Flag Smashers, all of a certain age.
Yeah.
There's no one overlooking like 30 in this thing.
Right.
So that's that. It's important to note. But also, this to me, we've seen them two episodes now. They are badasses. They went against at least one super soldier, Falcon, and the two new guys, and handed them their asses. Mm-hmm. This girl was terrified of that phone call. Like, yes. If you watch the acting, she was terrified about this guy. Mm-hmm. So the fact that we don't know what the Power Broker is, and this elevated him instantly into massive threat to her because she's smiling when she's kicking their asses. She's having the time of her life on top of that truck doing what she was doing, like not sweating, not showing any kind. She knew what she was doing, how to handle herself. This guy stopped her in her tracks and terrified her. So I think this was incredibly important for that one reason. Point, like, who? Here we go. This Power Broker. This is someone bad. This is what this guy's doing. I thought that was awesome, and because
I think
she's such a good actress. She's so good.
Yeah.
That one look. She doesn't say a word to her team, but she looks at them like, "Oh man, what have I gotten these guys into? This is bad stuff."
Agreed. And for those of you who may want some more. To see her work some more, there's a great BBC show or British show called Don't Tip the Driver with him and with her. And who's the doctor again? I always forget his name. The one that helped Hugo Weaving in the first Captain America. Zola. Dr. Zola.
Toby Jones.
Toby Jones. He plays
Toby Jones. Toby Jones.
He plays her dad. And so in this weird little kind of British comedy. So if you want to enjoy more work from both of those people for the MCU now, feel free to watch that at some point. All right, let's move on to the next thing. Sam and Bucky. Bucky wants them to steal the shield. They're clearly dealing with the ramifications of the mission, and they're getting their butts kicked in the conversation with John Walker and Battlestar here. Sam reminds him what happened last time they did that, which is, of course, an allusion to Captain America Civil War when they were on the run for 2 years. Sam says they got no one, but Bucky says there is someone they should meet. Kalinowski, then they have this weird interaction with the kid, Black Falcon, which is, of course, a shot at how they used to call heroes in both DC and Marvel. Black this or that. They knock on the door of a house and a young black kid answers, "Is this the Patriot? Is this the Young Avengers? We shall see." We meet Isaiah Bradley, Carl Lumley. I got to tell you guys, I got emotional seeing Carl Lumley because, I mean, I remember him from Mantis, man.
Mantis, buddy.
Of course. I watched that back when they didn't do superhero TV shows, ladies and gentlemen. And then, of course, he's the voice of Martian Manhunter on Justice League. It's so great to see him. What an incredibly intense scene, alluding to the history of Bucky with Hydra, Isaiah's battles with him. Then they reveal that he was a super soldier and how the country treated him, 30 years in jail. The Americans experimented with him, and Hydra messed with him as well. And then Isaiah launches a tin into the wall, confirming his abilities, and kicks them out. So, Kalinowski, you're the Captain American aficionado. Talk to me about this scene, because there's a lot from the comics.
I'm kind of trying to go back because there's a big disservice that's happening right now with the fact of the Captain America Truth, which brought Isaiah Bradley, the story of him. It's not reprints anywhere. You can't find this thing. I was talking to Winston the other day about this, like why they are not publishing this right now, like a special trade to coincide with this. Because I have maybe one or two of the issues. I tried to find my back issues this week to talk about it more because it's not reprinted as a trade. Wow. I remember because they experimented with the Super Soldier Serum before Steve Rogers, because, you know, it's kind of like what had happened back then. They're like, well, we're not going to use it on the white people. Who knows? Someone goes by with it. We don't know what this is. So we're going to test on the black people first. Like, just disgusting in our history, like real life stuff that had happened.
Yep.
And that's glossed over. So when Steve Rogers finds out about this and stuff, it's fascinating and it's incredible storytelling. So they've kind of, we knew like when Carl Lumley's cast, you don't cast Carl Lumley just to be some regular guy. So yeah. I know there were thoughts that they all thought like, is he going to be this? Is he going to be Isaiah Bradley? And to see that it is him and to see potential Patriot in that same scene,
yeah.
which the MCU is so good about stuff like that. Cause I remember, gosh, now it's been 10 years ago with Sebastian Stan as Bucky. Like, you know, he wasn't a forefront in that movie and there was no, you could see like maybe one day we'll get there. So with Patriot, I think they're absolutely laying those seeds with that guy right there. But to see where he's living, you know, and it's so funny because I have to think, and WandaVision forced me to realize this, communities are in disarray and run down. And it's because for 5 years, a blip, like maybe there was no sanitation. Maybe there was, you know, people were taking care of it. So this area itself was run down. So there's this guy worked for the government and he's just looks like, you know, he's holding up pretty well. His body, the super soldier serum is kind of keeping him going, but he wasn't like Captain Bucky that was frozen. He's been alive, tested on. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of heartbreaking to see this guy who wants, you would think in this world, you want to be with someone that like you because there's very few of them, right? That we know of. Right. So you'd see Bucky is kind of a kindred spirit. Like they were both products and he had wanted nothing to do with that man.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's fascinating to say, I hope this isn't the last we're going to see of him, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think we're definitely going to see way more of him.
I hope so.
Vogel, he lays down the groundwork and says to him, you can't just wake up and think you're someone else. Once again, alluding to this storyline with Bucky and his PTSD. In fact, Carl does a great acting moment with just the slight cock of his head. It's so brilliant. It's this entire scene, how much presence he has just in the scene. In my opinion, this is a scene of the show, of this episode, rather. What did you think overall of the scene and the information that we got and the reactions from everybody in this situation?
I think it was. This was probably like one of my top scenes in the episode for sure. Like we've all said, you know, in the comics, Isaiah Bradley's grandson, Eli Bradley, does become Patriot in the Young Avengers. In the comics, they go in a very roundabout way. He doesn't have his grandfather's super soldier serum. Eventually, he gets a blood transfusion and he does get it. Yeah. I really hope that in the Marvel Universe, they just streamline all that and say, you're the grandson, you've got some super soldier serum. But so for anyone playing Young Avengers bingo, we got two Young Avengers in WandaVision and probably a third one right here, the grandson of the original Black Captain America, who will also become a big hero in the Marvel Universe going forward. I think Isaiah Bradley's story is so, it's sad. It's so, you know, the whole idea of that story, the whole idea of the fact that the American, the government experimented on black soldiers to try and recreate Captain America, you know, is pulled directly from like the Tuskegee study of untreated syphilis. Exactly. Which is a real life thing where the government just infected a bunch of black men with syphilis just to see what would happen and didn't tell them. And it's a horrible, horrible, horrible part of our history. And I think it's really great that that story inspired the story of Isaiah Bradley and that that story is now coming up in the MCU because it brings to light a part of our history that is not great. And I love it when popular culture and popular entertainment creates a story that like forces us to face some things about ourselves that we don't like, which I think Falcon and Winter Soldier is doing really, really well throughout. I think it's also great. Carl Lumley does a great job. I love the fact that like he basically is like, I almost ripped that fucking arm off of this guy. Like we've seen Bucky in action. We know how badass the Winter Soldier is. So for their interaction to be like, they sent me in the comics, Isaiah Bradley was sent behind enemy lines to deal with Hydra's super soldier experimentation and kind of stop it. And so they kind of tweaked it for the movies to say, okay, well here you are actually just going and dealing with the Winter Soldier, which more or less is kind of the same thing. He's Hydra's super soldier. So I thought that was a good sort of tweak from his story in the comics. In the comics, the government does him dirty. He puts on the Captain America costume and goes in and saves the fucking day, and they arrest him for impersonating Captain America. So they don't say that explicitly here, but the fact that this man was a hero, stood up against Winter Soldier, did everything the government asked for him, and got put in jail and experimented on for years is tragic. The other thing that I thought was really great in his dialogue is when he does say to Bucky, what you said, Johnny, where he was like, you don't get to just wake up and decide who you want to be. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
But then he goes, well, maybe it does for folks like you.
Great point.
And I think that hitting that beat that, look, we all love Bucky. We're on Bucky's side. We're all happy that Bucky got pardoned. We've gone on this journey with him. The fact remains, he killed so many people as an assassin. And granted, he did save half the universe, so fair. But like the fact that like this guy is living this life where he did all these horrible things and got a pat on the back and said, hey, here's your government-approved therapist.
Right.
And Carl Isaiah's story is, I did everything the government asked for me. I was a hero, and I got thrown in jail.
Right.
That's a pretty clear distinction. Yep. So I thought they handled the scene great. It was subtle. It didn't hit you over the head. It was acted so powerfully. And I'm with you guys. I hope that this is, I don't think this is the last we're going to see of Isaiah Bradley. And I really hope we see more of him because I think it's a great story and there's a lot more to tell there with him.
Yeah,
absolutely. If you look at the history of the comics, Isaiah, it's a 300 African-American soldiers were experimented on in the comics, in the story here. And only a handful of them survived the gruesome process of having the super soldier put in them. After only a few missions, only Isaiah, Maurice Canfield, and Sergeant Luke Evans remained, and eventually it was just Isaiah. And in the comics, he was put in jail for 17 years and experimented on and whatever, and then pardoned. In this world, in this MCU, it's 30, Shannon. That is a lot. But, you know, overall, we're seeing so much about they're laying the groundwork of what may be coming. But again, like I said in the first episode, they better pay this shit off. We only have 4 episodes left. They are way higher up on the high wire than they were in the last episode. And there is a lot more flames and a lot more alligators and sharks. So, I mean, you got to pay this shit off. So I'm giving them leeway, but I'm a little worried they're going to cop out on the payoff a little bit like they did at the end of WandaVision. What do you think, Shannon, about this scene?
I mean, I certainly hope not. I mean, they have 4 episodes. We, you know, the last 2 have been of a similar runtime. Hopefully, if they need more runway in those later episodes, they get it. The thing that really strikes me about Isaiah Bradley's character is you think about what Erskine said in First Avenger, which is the serum takes good and makes it great, takes bad, makes it worse.
Yeah.
And so the fact that Isaiah Bradley, one, survived. Like, he survived. They dropped him behind enemy lines so he could deal with Bucky. We can infer that he turned the tide of the Korean War, perhaps, in favor of the U.S. and South Korea. And then to then be thrown into a jail and be like, okay, whatever we did to him worked. Now let's see if we can get it out of him and give it to people that we really want to have it.
Right.
And so the idea that it takes what is already there in you and makes it greater, Isaiah Bradley, as you know, a black man in the 40s or early 50s, was a survivor because he had to then go and you know, turn the tide of a war, and then was jailed for 30 years and lived to tell about it, and got out and was able to then try to put together a little bit of a life after the government that he helped save effectively wrecked it.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you want more?
I don't know if you guys, I'm trying to remember if the super soldier with Isaiah was a result of Steve Rogers, if they were trying to test it before Steve Rogers.
It's after. We actually made this mistake a few weeks ago. I said it the way that you're saying it right now, and I went back and double checked because I was wrong. This wasn't that they experimented on black soldiers before they gave Steve Rogers the super soldier serum.
Right.
Steve Rogers became the super soldier. He disappeared. The government wanted another super soldier, and they experimented on 300 black men. So it happened after that, and which is why Isaiah took the Captain America costume, became the black Captain America, and then got thrown in jail for it. Right. So it did take place after Cap, but I made the same mistake a few weeks
ago. I was trying to think if it was a what-if issue or something, because I'm like, why did I think that? But thank you for clearing that up.
Yeah, absolutely, Mike. And before or after, it still is fucking terrible. And
it's awful. Irregardless.
And I like that they use that Tuskegee experiment to bring into the real, to bring something from the real world into the comics to really kind of highlight it for sure.
I got to tell you, to prepare for this, I just went and looked up. Like, I knew what it was, but I went and like I was reading some more about it. Like, is
the real life experiment?
The real life experiment. Yes. It is horrible.
Yeah. But I find this to be so interesting because remember, this is coming out during the time of COVID. We are seeing many communities in the African-American community, the Latino community, who do not trust these vaccines because of situations like the Tuskegee experiment. And that's been told for generations in the Black community, two generations of people. So their unwillingness in the NBA, in the NFL, to get to take the vaccine, these are the reasons why. And so it's interesting how they almost seem prescient having done this stuff before COVID happened. This was going to come out right around the time that we had the shutdown. So how could they have known how topical this situation would have been? So
very
really
good point.
Interesting, happy accident there. All right, let's move on here. Sam and Bucky now are outside. They have a back and forth here about Isaiah. How could nobody bring him up? Sam says Bucky tells him Steve didn't know because Bucky didn't tell him. He said Isaiah had been through enough, didn't want to throw that on top of the pile with having maybe Steve Rogers come after or come talk to him. Then these police officers pull up, seeing a Black man and a white man having a disagreement in the street. Out of nowhere, these police officers come up, and of course, they're all white. They step out, they ask the Black man for his ID, ask Sam for his ID. Sam doesn't have any. And then eventually they realize who he is, and they all of a sudden, just like the bank loan officer, oh my God, I'm so sorry, blah, blah, blah. But then they realize there is a warrant for Bucky's arrest because he missed the therapy situation, and they take him away. Let's move all this together here. We cut to the police station. Sam and Dr. Rayner meet. Captain America and his therapist know each other. Captain America is the one who's getting Bucky released from having been arrested, just as I mentioned just a few seconds ago. But they have to get into a session with Bucky and Sam. They do a soul gazing exercise, which turns into a staring contest. And then Bucky reveals why Sam aggravates him. And this is a really powerful moment. He says he's upset about Sam giving up the shield because Steve trusted you. He gave you that shield and you throw it away. If he was wrong about you, then maybe he was wrong about me. And Sam counters and says, maybe this is something that you or Steve can never understand. And I think he's speaking as a Black man to them. Can you understand that I did what I thought was the right thing? Says he'll squash their issues and they can just get done with the mission. And if they get it done, he's happy to take a long vacation away from Bucky. Bucky says the same thing, turns to the psychiatrist, says, what was rule number two? Don't hurt anyone, as kind of a jab, and then walks out. All right. I don't know. Michael, let's go to you on this one first. First, the interaction in the street, and then what happens here in the police station. What'd you think?
The interaction in the street just struck me as it was so – as soon as you heard that police siren, it's like the fact that we all know exactly how this is about to go down is such a sad commentary on where we are as a country. But we all knew exactly how that was going to go down. Right. And it went down exactly like that's what happened. I mean, yeah, where's your ID to Bucky? Are you okay? Is this man bothering you?
Right.
That was like so brutal and upsetting. Before that, you gotta really like give it like Sam, who has given everything that the show is dealing with, one of the reasons he was having issues with that shield, partially like who could live up to Steve Rogers, but partially as a Black man kind of is already thinking ahead to what would happen if I did step into this. So it's to then find out that there was a Black super soldier that he didn't know about, that nobody knew about, that had been treated so horribly by the government, like that's a lot to drop on him. And so to go from that to then just getting pulled over by the police and kind of like, you know, profiled as a Black man, like it's just like, it was so realistic and it was so shitty. Like it was just rough all around. And then getting back into the therapy scene, you know, a lot of like anytime these two are just left to just bicker with each other, it's enjoyable. Like they're like two old ladies and it's just it's a joy to watch. But to your point, to have all of like the funny, is this a staring contest? What are you doing? And all like the humor. And then to just like slice it with Bucky just being so honest in that moment about what he's feeling with that, you know, Bucky knows what he's done. He knows his life. He knows that he's been a killer. And I think that the fact, and you know, there, when you go back and watch Civil War, you know, he has these moments with Steve where he's like, I don't think I'm worth this.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm worth you doing all the things that you've done. And Steve is like, you're my best friend. Like, yeah, this is it. And Steve's faith in Bucky, I think, is the lifeline he needed.
Yeah.
And now that Steve isn't there, this idea that Steve is right about everything. and Steve was right about me. And if he was wrong about Sam, then he's also could be wrong about me. And maybe I am not worth saving. Maybe I am not, not worthy of anything given what I've done. And so to just like admit that and throw it out there, like that was really powerful. And then I think you're absolutely right, John, like for then mm-hmm. Sam to turn around and say, you and Steve will never understand.
Right.
Like it is a truth. Like Steve Rogers, biggest hero in the world. Everyone in this show is trying to fill Steve Rogers' shoes. Yeah. He still doesn't understand what it's like to be a black hero.
Yeah.
And neither does Bucky, and neither of them do. And that Sam tried to do what he thought was right. And so the two of them being really, really honest in the scene, it was a beautiful, beautiful moment. And it really does set up how important what happens with the shield and what happens with Cap's legacy is. It's not just about who gets to be Captain America, who gets to be the leader of the Avengers, who gets to be the cool guy. Like mm-hmm. they are both, everything about them is on the line because yeah. of these decisions they're making about this shield and this legacy.
Yeah, Shannon, I mean, it seems pretty clear that, you know, obviously we're touching on the racial issues. Certainly, you know, having cops question a white man when there's a black man and a white man having a discussion, having them like question the white man, are you okay? This is something we hear about and we know about and we see daily, almost daily now, as it becomes more and more commonplace to see the reporting of it all. We see that happening. So certainly an allusion there, but also this idea that Bucky withheld this stuff from Sam. Like Bucky has not told Sam everything. And now this, and then finding out this Isaiah Bradley situation, what he says later on in this interrogation scene, or sorry, in the psychiatry scene there with Amy Aquino, he says it very clearly, like, you two will not understand this. So this may be more of an allusion to, as a black man, wearing that shield and what it represents and knowing the history of what they've done to my people, this is not the thing that I want to do necessarily. Don't you think it was kind of driving that home, or did you get something else?
Oh, no, no. What, 100%. Mm. And just the fact that you can have two men of different races having probably an intense conversation.
Yeah.
It didn't, to me at least, it didn't look like anyone was about to throw a punch. It was two guys having a debate. And cop cars roll up and they immediately go to Bucky. Are you okay? Is this guy bothering you? And it's just like, oh my God, this is terrible. And then when you find out that it's, you know, that Sam Wilson helped save the world, it was like, oh, so sorry about this. And then the thing that it really, really struck me is when they say to Bucky, like, hey, you're under arrest, you missed your court mandated therapy. He's under arrest, so they have to put the cuffs on him, but they cuff him in the front.
Right.
And when they cuff you, they have to put the cuffs on you, but it is more comfortable in the front, and it is also means you're less of a threat. Like we're not as worried about you as we would be someone that we cuff from behind. And I think if the situation had played out differently, I think Sam Wilson would have been cuffed from behind. That's mm-hmm. that's my guess. And then you get to this great scene in the police station, and Walker is starting to show more and more of his less appealing qualities. Mm. That one, he says to the therapist, like, Bucky's not going to be on a set schedule, like. He do what you got to do, but then you're releasing him to me.
He's reporting to me. Yeah.
Yeah. He is not a mental health professional. They did not talk about that degree that he got in Good Morning America. So that is not his call. Yeah. But then also when he says, you know, have him report to me, you too, Wilson.
You and too, it's like, Wilson.
Yep. Yeah. I was just like, oh, this is okay. Hell we're no. starting to get the shades that, as you guys pointed out, that entitlement that I'm in charge. I'm the guy. You got to listen to me no matter what you want. And then the therapy session before we got to those very big sort of dramatic character moments, you got the Riggs and Murtaugh moments of them having to scoot closer and closer. And that is what I hope we get to see more of, because thinking of like the Lethal Weapon history.
Yeah.
Riggs and Murtaugh argued in every movie, but you also knew that they loved each other, that they were brothers. Yeah. And it certainly seems like that's the road we're on with Sam and Bucky.
Yeah, I mean, Kalinowski, this is more of their interaction in this therapy scene. There's also the interaction out in the street. Of course, you can address all that throughout. But also, listen, you've been bringing up this idea that the possibility that there's some that maybe Captain America or maybe Walker has been hiding this power he may have, the super soldier stuff he may have. Who knows? But also, are we starting to question the tactics of this therapist? I mean, these are some brutal tactics, forcing them to face each other. She's very brusque in her tactics. Like, is there something nefarious going on here too?
I don't know. Like, I can't speak for any type of therapy, but like, she talked about her combat.
Yeah, true.
You know, and then she mentioned she worked with Walker.
Yeah, she worked with Walker.
Fascinating. So she doesn't mince words. She doesn't need to. These are grown men. She's not going to put on kid gloves with them. The scene before it, though, for me, I don't know about you guys. I've been there. I've been the guy walking down the street with my black friend, and the cops come up, and I like Mike. You explained white privilege to me. The best anyone's ever done it to me. And it was, I have never walked down the street, had a cop come by and think anything of it. I've never had to worry about, I'm going to get stopped. He's going to pull me over. Or if I've been pulled over, I've never had this. Like, I just haven't. That's the white privilege. And Bucky, the fact that he's killed, the whole Civil War was his face everywhere in the world hunting him down. And he's walking around and they're like, not even hands on guns with this guy. They come up and it's like, is this guy bothering you? Epitome of white privilege there, and the fact that they did it and went there, it shows. And I think, but Bucky's face is all of us, like, oh God, here we go. Please don't. Why are we doing this? Why? Come on, man.
It's Bucky who says, "Don't you know who this is?"
Yeah.
It's like, come on, man. And it's just like,
but it's also sad that he has to do that. Don't you know?
Sad that he has to.
Yeah,
right. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I thought that was great. And then for me, the best scene was Bucky to him, like, you know what he says, like, if he doesn't believe in you, like, it means he doesn't believe in me and what I did. Like, that to me is like, could you see he's broken? He's such a broken man.
Yeah.
And it's different because Sam is not broken. Sam, you know, he's pretty much, he knows who he is and he's not questioning his identity and the place in the world. It's his place in the future of this world. Whereas Bucky is broken and he needs Sam. Yeah. I think that's why they're so good together. Maybe that's why I'm inferring that they're together in that, because I want to see them together. And I know, like we said last episode, they're the two guys that make a great Captain America and they need each other. But Bucky doesn't open up like that. And Bucky's not built that way.
Yeah.
So to see them go that, you know, and then when they come out together, like they go through their little therapy and they got a little bit understanding, like, okay, this is where we're going to be. And I love it. He's like, just the comedy. They play comedy so good with the knees. Like, you put your knee there. That's where it's going. Oh, right there. Okay. Yeah. That's where it's going. Right that close. Okay. And then they come out and he's just sitting there. And then that leads into that scene outside. And you're like, But again, he's a military man. And John, you speak to this. When you get those guys in the military, you know, it's this way. It's the rank you follow. I'm in charge. You're following me. There is no debate. We're not going to debate this. Right. I'm given the choice. I'm in charge. Follow these orders.
Yeah, but this is such a highly unusual situation.
Which
is a great point. So let's leave into that scene, because what you just mentioned, the scene goes forward. Bucky and Sam walk out of the police station. Now they're together. And Walker, with Battlestar, in an irritating dick kind of way, turns the fucking siren on and the police.
Siren.
I mean, come on. A black
not even
man
his car.
Has, I mean, a black man just experienced this with the police. You're going to turn the siren on. What's Battlestar's moment? Like, I'm just wondering about, you're a black man too. Like, what's your issue with this? Why are you okay with the way Walker is being? This is fascinating to me, and I hope they explore that. But they have this conversation. Walker reveals intel about Carly Morgenthau. They see that the symbol is appearing in these displaced communities. She's taking medicine to one of these refugee camps. And Bucky, to kind of dig at Walker, says, things are getting really intense for you, aren't they, Walker? And Sam says they're free agents. So they don't have to get approvals and run things up the chain of command. So it wouldn't make sense for them to work with them. And here comes the battle line. Walker says, well, then stay the hell out of my way. And with Battlestar doing the tough guy stare. And as we keep going, we go back to the Flag Smashers, who've been tracked down by the Power Broker's men. One of their dudes volunteers to hold them off so they can escape. He yanks down a telephone pole, gets shot to pieces, and some random dude who was part of these group of people calls what we assume is the Power Broker and says they got away. Then we go back to Sam and Bucky, and Bucky pitches the idea of going to see Zemo. And we see this European location. We hear this powerful classical music. And there is Daniel Brühl as Zemo as the episode ends. Shannon, their interaction outside and then into the Zemo moment. Talk to me.
Awesome. 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 One, I love that when Walker finally drops his faux nice guy persona and says, stay the hell out of my way, he goes MMA Deadeye. I think you do see a shift in there, and this is, I guess, you know, this is technically one of our good guys, and then to go to our supposed bad guys, and you see that guy willing to sacrifice himself, so the other sacrifice for the cause, sacrifice so his friends and his compatriots can get away. It's a very interesting juxtaposition. Yeah. And then you get them talking about Zemo. And I love the fact that there is a chessboard inside what I'm assuming is solitary confinement. So he's probably making a move, turning the chessboard, playing it again. And the idea that you're just going to go sit in a room and talk with this guy, my assumption is they're going to have to break him out. That he probably doesn't get visiting hours, as it were. Yeah. And then when you look in the bottom corner of what the cell number is, it is 2187, which is Princess Leia's cell phone, or cell number on the Death Star in the first Star Wars. I saw that. Hey, Easter egg. I'm useful again.
All right. Callan, ask you, what do you think of these two scenes juxtaposed to?
Walker with that cockiness, like he's leaning. It's not his cop car. Like, who do you think you are putting your hand in some guy's cop car? Whoop, 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 whoop. Like, you motherfucker. Like,
right.
And but on the other hand, I love the guy. Like, his character. I love his character. Like, he's so much fun. Like,
oh, listen, Wyatt Russell is doing this actor
as an actor.
Job.
Yeah. Like, to know what you're dealing with against Chris Evans, you don't top Chris Evans in Captain America.
Right.
But know what you can play with the material and the material they're giving him. And it could be one dimensional. But he's already gotten so many dimensions in this episode. That first scene in the locker room is night and day to this scene on the cop car.
Yep.
But it's just like, who's the guy? So I love that he's eating this up. Like, he's playing the hell out of this. And I love this guy in this. But you're right, John. With Battlestar, that's an interesting, like, dude, what's going on? Why you got a problem with this? But I think they look at it as like, we're superheroes like you. We're in this fraternity. Right. We're like Avengers. Let's go to our compound and hang out like you used to do with Stark and his buddies. We're in this together. And I think he just sees that. But I love that they hang up, and then the power broker scene speaks for itself, kind of that shadowy power broker. And for me, the scene with Zemo, because the last time we saw him, and we've got that brilliant line by Everett Ross, where he's like, to see yourself fail so spectacularly. And he looks up and goes, did I? And it's like, it's fractured. Everything is fractured, and these guys are going back to him for help now. Like, were they thinking about this 5 years ago? No, but that last line, the last line we see Zemo, when he looks up, he's like, did I fail? It's just like, oh, and he's such a good actor. Yeah. To see those guys coming to him after what he's put them through. Oh boy. That's just fantastic. Fantastic.
Yeah. Vogel, what do you take away from these interactions, both in the cop car, power brokers, and then the Zemo shot?
I mean, cop car was even more Caucasity, so I was done with this guy. I was like, oh, God damn it. I thought this scene actually made me think a lot about Civil War. And some previous things in the episode, too. But, you know, in Civil War, the overall idea is these superpowered beings need someone. There has to be some level of oversight. They can't just go off and do whatever they want. Mm-hmm. And it's easy to see that point. I mean, we talked about it a lot in WandaVision, given what Wanda does. You can see how with these people that have these levels of powers and these levels of abilities, there's this idea that somebody needs to be calling the shots. Mm-hmm. But this show is making a really good case for Steve Rogers' side of this argument, which is you don't want the government telling your superhero team what to do. Yep. Earlier, we kind of jumped over it, but in that scene in the truck, when we were talking about the GRC and we were talking about Flag Smashers, and you know, Walker says violent revolutionaries aren't really good for anyone's cause. And Sam says, yeah, well, that's usually said by the people with the resources. And then here you have this whole interchange where Sam and Bucky straight up say, like, you have to run stuff up the ladder. You have to get permission. We're free agents. We don't have to do that. We're going to go do our thing. And you start to really see the inherent problems with a Captain America who's doing exactly what the U.S. government is telling him to do. Or what he wants to do. That we might get to that point. But right now, everything they're doing, it's clear that Sam and Bucky are realizing that there's more to the Flag Smashers than just you are bad terrorists, you are screwing with the GRC, you must be stopped. Like, the fact that they're taking vaccines instead of weapons, like, you have the heroes who are sort of looking in those gray areas and trying to see what's going on. Walker and Battlestar, not gray area guys. And the U.S. government, not really a gray area government. So you start to really see the other side of the Civil War argument, which is Steve's side, which is this is a bad road to go down.
Yeah.
Do you think that was the point of WandaVision 100% after that? It was like, oh, the Accords might have been the right thing. Mm-hmm. They were 100% with Wanda fearing and what the, but now we get this side of it on this separate show. It's like, oh, this is the other side.
Yeah.
There are two, I mean.
Yeah. There's, yeah. I think that Marvel's doing a really nice job of, and this is why Civil War is like one of those iconic comic books that everybody loves, because you had Tony Stark on one side and Steve Rogers on the other side. Mm. And both of them have valid points. There's valid points. This is a whole new world. And like, this is where superhero comics are the at their best. Like, mm-hmm. look, we all love awesome costumes and cool powers and like, holy shit, did you see that action sequence? That was amazing. Like, that's all good. Right. But when a superhero story creates ethical and moral dilemmas where both sides have valid arguments and it's hard to figure out what the right thing to do is, that's why people keep coming back to these characters and these stories over and over and over again. What Marvel exactly. is doing while giving us epic entertainment in movies and TV and streaming and everything. And like, oh my God, it's one big continuous story. The action and special effects are amazing. Like all of the soap opera stuff that we love, they're also creating like an ethical and moral dilemma in this show about like, what does it mean to be a hero? Yeah. What's the right thing to do here?
I thought though comics weren't political. I was told that on the internet that they're not supposed to be political.
The internet keeps saying that, and yeah. the internet needs to go read some comic books.
Yeah, exactly. Some actual comics. Yeah.
And then one final thing, you guys nailed it all, but I'm just really Zemo as Hannibal Lecter has me very excited.
Oh,
like the whole setup here is like if he may as well next episode start talking about some fava beans and a nice Chianti, and I will buy it. Like I am on board for Zemo the Cannibal. Like let's just go there.
Yeah. but my girlfriend and I are working through The Alienist. We're into the second season. Mm. So I've had a lot of Daniel Brühl in my life in the last couple of weeks. So when he popped up here, I was like, oh, here we go. That's perfect timing. So, yeah, I agree with everything three of you said. I thought the arrogance of Walker to turn that thing on got me in the bad frame of mind. But then the back and forth here, clearly this is going to be a battle between Bucky and Sam and Walker and Battlestar. What is that going to lead to? Are these guys going to get desperate as they see Sam and Bucky siding possibly with the Flag Smashers in this situation up against the power bro and his power broker? You know, we know this with America, with if you study American politics, if you study international politics, we have aligned ourselves with some pretty nasty people in the past and have done deals behind the scenes with some people of power in the past. Go study our relationship with Saudi Arabia if you want some real knowledge about what's going down and how many deals we've made and ignored certain things because of the overall good that we supposedly are doing in that relationship. The power broker could have some connection to the government. And if power broker is connected to the government and they have access to the serum, do we see John Walker and Battlestar in desperation to fight Sam and Bucky take this serum? It seems like there's possibilities here when he says, just stay the hell out of my way, because already he got his butt kicked by that girl. Certainly Bucky could kick the crap out of him and Battlestar by himself with his super soldier stuff. So I wonder if that's what we're being set up. We shall see. Remember, we got four more episodes left. We'll see what happens. Any final words, gentlemen, or shall we wrap?
Let's wrap it up.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you all so much for watching this spoiler review episode of Falcon and Winter Soldier, Star Spangled Man. Appreciate you all taking the time to watch the episode. Please, what do we have to tell them, Shannon?
Yeah, if you'd like to follow us on social media, on Twitter, it's @geek_buddies. On Instagram, @the_geek_buddies. If you'd like to follow me on social media, on Twitter, it's @Shannon_McClung. On Instagram, @ShannonTheGeekBuddy. If you would like to follow Mr. Vogel, it is @MKToon. If you would like to follow Mr. Roca, it is @TheRocaSays.
Mr. Vogel?
Look, the Flag Smashers have a motto. One world, one people. And we want that to be the Geek Buddy motto. And we want you all here watching this show with us. Just like the Flag Smashers, we have an agenda, and we are going to make it happen. And here's how you can help us with that agenda. Leave some comments below. Well, let us know what you thought of this episode. What did you think of what we thought of this episode? Where do you agree with us? Where do you disagree with us? Did we get anything wrong? Let us know. We will see it. Like this post. Subscribe to Johnny's Outlaw page. And if you are listening to us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or Anchor or anywhere where podcasts are downloadable, give us some stars, give us some ratings, give us some comments there. It helps us go up in the rankings. And the best thing that you can do, and you guys are awesome at it, and we see all of the fun ways that you say it and the complimentary things you say, and we very much appreciate it, is retweet this video, repost it, send it to your friends, tell everybody that they should check this out. We are having a wonderful, wonderful time with our good buddy Mike Kalinowski, breaking this thing down, talking about each scene, really diving into what Marvel's doing. and we want to keep doing it. So that is how you can help us, and we really, really appreciate it.
We really do. Mike Kalinowski, thanks again for joining us. It's so awesome to have you on this thing. Please tell people where they can find you and what you got going on, brother man.
I'm at Mike Kalinowski, guys. That's where I'm on Twitter. I got Sith Council every Wednesday with Mr. Christian Harloff and the SDN Network. Join me there. I got my YouTube channel. Going to start bringing that up. Mike Kalinowski, get Mike Kalinowski. That's what I am. There you go. I want a police siren like that I can have just with you guys. Just flip it every now and then.
Oh, damn it. Bloop, bloop. Awesome. How did Kalinowski find us? Damn it. Bloop, bloop. but yeah, and also, do they do the Twitch rewatches? If you guys want to watch the Invincible, the watch along.
Watch along for the three episodes. I think I'll have the link up today. We had it up last night. So watch along with that. That was awesome. That show was incredible, man. Jeez.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, we got all kinds of stuff happening here on the Outlaw Nation channel. Geek Buddy, certainly every week we do our regular show and we do these reviews. If you missed our regular show, we dropped it about 3 days ago. Please go and watch that as well. Give it a view. Give it a comment. Give it a like. Give all the stuff. Plus, we've got all these other stuff happening. Game Time, Strong Style, The Impolite Truths, more reviews coming. Look for my review of Nobody dropping this weekend. And also, I'll be reviewing Godzilla versus Kong. I've got a screener link for that. Going to see what that looks like. Oh, so I'm looking forward to that as well. So all that. And maybe join, follow me on the social media with me and Shannon, because we're going to be watching something tonight as well. Maybe we'll do some Insta stories from it. We shall see. But anyway, thanks to everybody. We appreciate it madly. And we'll talk to you next time on another brand new spoiler review episode here on the
Geek
Buddies.